You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and streaming live at WPKN.org. Coming up next is In Context with Ken McDermott Rowe and Gus Cantavero, the public affairs call-in show with listeners from Beirut to London, from Beijing to Bridgeport, only on WPKN.
Good afternoon. This is Ken McDermott Rowe. The name of the show is In Context, WP Ken's live call-in show. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hey, everybody.
And also joining us behind the board, doing double duty, is our military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott Rowe.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Well, let me give out the phone number right away so you can make a note of it. If you want to give us a ring or make a comment during the show, it's 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756. And if you prefer to email us, drop us an email at ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org. And we have our laptop here. So if we get your email during the show, if you'd rather do that than calling, we can read your question or your comment right on the air. And if you want to reach us in between the shows, you're welcome to go to our website, incontextreport.com. First of all, I want to thank everyone for their generosity during the recent WPKN fundraiser. It's your generosity, your contributions that keep us on the air and allow us to bring you music you haven't heard before and also important news and information which you haven't heard before. And so thank you very much. And you could still make a contribution by going to our website, WPKN.org. And I also want to note that Gus and Marchand and I will be appearing at the Greenwich Public Library at a performance of the play Mark Twain versus the Imperialists, a one-act play that highlights the political, very not well-known political activities of Mark Twain. And that will be on Saturday, October 22nd at 2 p.m. That's Mark Twain versus the Imperialists, Saturday, October 22nd at 2 p.m. at the Greenwich Public Library, 101 West Putnam Avenue. And Gus and Marchand and I will be there, and we will stay around after the play, and we'd be happy to meet listeners and to talk to them about the political impact of the play and contemporary politics. In today's program, we'd like your comments and your questions regarding two very important subjects in the news today. One is assassinations, and that, of course, has come to the fore because of the assassination on September 30th of Anwar al-Awlaki, who was an American citizen. He was killed allegedly by an American drone in Yemen. Also killed that day was another American citizen named Samir Khan by the United States, and his death was termed collateral damage. And the question we want to ask you today is the U.S. assassination program a legal act of self-defense in your regard, a legitimate act of self-defense, or has the United States become a rogue state? And the other subject we want to talk about today is the Occupy Wall Street movement, which started at September 17th in New York City and down on Wall Street. It's now in its fourth week, and it's spread to 25 cities approximately so far. So we're interested in how you feel about the Occupy Wall Street movement and where you think it will go. So we're going to talk about assassinations, and we're going to talk about Occupy Wall Street. And you can call us at 203-336-9756 or email us at ken@mdrtalk.org. And to get things started, Gus, could you tell us what you think about the assassinations program of the United States?
Yeah, it's very troubling to me. You know, the implications are far-reaching, and it's very very confusing to me to hear the comments from the mainstream media regarding this fact because they just accept the fact that it's okay to kill someone who is an enemy. You know, we've already set up the campaign of bombing innocents, right? Of collateral damage, of taking out water utilities, power to poor people. Do we already have a call?
We have a call already.
Oh, let's go ahead. We'll finish this up in a second.
Yeah, go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Hello,
Contacts,
go ahead.
WPKN.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're great. What's going on? What's on your mind?
You just provoked my brain. The word you use, drone, which is unmanned, device that right. is remotely controlled, and mm-hmm. we killed somebody that was a U.S. citizen by using a drone.
Mm-hmm.
1984 was an act of a fictional novel, I thought. But President Obama said something during the India uprising that Martin Luther King often said. We support peaceful protest, correct?
Yes.
In theory, at least.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. In theory, the United States supports peaceful protest. And I worry about our own doorstep, like Mexico, and how far we're spread out with our military. And, you know, just seeing things on TV, future weapons and all this stuff that is unclassified, that used to be classified. God knows only what's classified now. I'm not paranoid.
That's okay. Paranoia is normal.
I'm just fearful about where technology is that we don't know about
Absolutely.
Yet. Like the drones. Unmanned aircraft, some developed the size of hummingbirds that can go in with cameras, and God knows what they can carry.
Absolutely, and we thank you very much for the call. And this raises an important point. We're actually going to be having a guest on in the next 2 weeks by the name of Mark Dice. And he wrote the book, Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True, in which he details all future technologies, past, present, and future, that are just the scariest nightmares that you can imagine. Things like LRAD, long-range acoustical device, which is a weapon that can be carried on the back of a truck, driven around, aimed at people, which will burst their eardrums.
Which was used in the Pittsburgh
G20 protests.
Last year.
It's rolled out in Europe. We have X-ray guns that can give you a heart attack from hundreds of yards away just by aiming it at you, and it focuses a concentrated microwave beam that penetrates your chest and gives you a heart attack with no exterior damage. So, yes, the caller is exactly correct. He's very afraid of the weapons that are possible. We have listening devices that are remote control flies with microchips implanted on the back of flies, winged insects and things like that, so that we can actually listen in on what's going on. The term a fly on the wall becomes a new term. And that's from his book, actually. So we're going to be talking about all that kind of stuff.
That's going to be on the 24th, right? In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, right.
At noon.
So getting back to the issue of Anwar Awlaki, we were talking about extrajudicial assassination. No judge, no jury, no trial, no evidence, nothing. What happened with Awlaki was that he was purported to be a terrorist, that he was a co-conspirator with Al-Qaeda. Not that he is a member of Al-Qaeda. The word that the Obama administration used was co-belligerent. Okay, so that's just somebody who's
and
a, the, I guess,
the
a
legal
rouser.
The legal memo that supposedly authorized mm-hmm. his murder, I would mm-hmm. call it a murder, did not concern itself with the quality of the evidence against him.
Well, the article from the New York Times for October 8th, the headline, you can search this out, it says, Secret U.S. Memo Made Legal Case to Kill a Citizen. The author is Charlie Savage. And here's a couple excerpts from the article. It says, the Obama administration's secret legal memorandum that opened the door to the killing of Anwar Awlaki, the American-born radical Muslim cleric hiding in Yemen, found that it would be lawful only if it were not feasible to take him alive, according to people who have read the document. And Obama gave the decision to move ahead with the killing of an American citizen without a trial, and a secret document provided justification for acting despite an executive order banning assassinations, and that's without repealing the executive order in order to
They're
do
still,
so.
They found a loophole.
They're just bulldozing right through it.
They defined it as not murder. Right?
I don't know how you can. I mean, the guy's heart isn't beating anymore.
Well, they say it's a war, so they're killing him as a soldier. Well,
okay, and that brings up a good point. Does that mean anybody who disagrees with you, by extension, could be assassinated? Or is it only those who pick up arms? Because Awlaki was not a fighter. He was an ideologue. So where do you draw the line? Listeners out there, do you see the implications of this? Ron Paul was at the National Press Club the other day, and he warns the journalists, you could be next on Obama's kill list. And he said, Ron Paul warned journalists that this is from the Daily Caller, and he says, Ron Paul warned journalists that they could be placed on a kill list should the government deem them a threat to national security. So if you're someone, a whistleblower, who gets documents that are top secret and you leak them, you know, like the Pentagon Papers, could you be deemed a threat to national security?
I think people should be aware that this is a qualitative change. I believe it was President Ford and President Reagan who signed this order against murder. Right. Now, of course, we have always had special ops since World War II.
Correct.
Through the CIA. And we've assassinated people. But we've never said it's legal to assassinate people.
Right.
And now we have a secret committee that draws up a secret list of people who can be killed. Which
An open
Americans.
Secret, by the way. I think that this is leaked on purpose as a chilling effect to anybody who potentially could be America's enemies.
I think you're right. In fact, on September the 15th, the New York Times printed an article. This is 2 weeks before Awlaki was assassinated, that the administration was considering widening its assassination program
Absolutely.
To include all sorts of any kind of operative mm-hmm. in a group that we had identified as an enemy of the United States.
Could it be talk show hosts? Could it be journalists? Could it be local activists, people who are just out there protesting the Federal Reserve because they don't call it an economic
crash?
Well,
you mentioned, and if you want to get into the conversation, we're talking about the assassination program of the United States that killed Anwar Awlaki on September 30th. And we're also talking about the Occupy Wall Street. And if you'd like to weigh in on either one, do we have a call?
No. Amarch, you wanted to weigh in.
You wanted to weigh in. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting is
excuse me, I've got to just give out the number, 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756, to talk about either the assassinations programs or the Occupy Wall Street.
Give the email address one more time.
And the email address, if you'd rather email, and we'll get your email and read your question or comment on the air, is ken@mdrtalk.org. And, of course, you're listening to In Context on WPKN.
Well, one of the things I think that's very interesting is the wording in one of the reports I read was that Anwar al-Awlaki was the spiritual leader of he was the spiritual advisor to al-Qaeda. Alleged, mind you, was the wording, meaning we didn't have any actual substantial evidence to prove yet.
And the evidence is not going to be given. We don't have access to the evidence.
There is no evidence that's going to be given. And fundamentally, there is no evidence given when the executive order is handed out to kill somebody. Fundamentally, you could say, oh, Joe Doak's down the street. I don't like him. That guy built a fence that's blocking the sun that I really don't – you know, call up the FBI. He's a member of al-Qaeda. You know, just bang.
And that's reminiscent of Soviet Russia, the SS, the KGB, where they would just be given a tip on someone, an anonymous tip, and they would just roll up to their house right around dinner time, and then they'd just pull everyone out, kicking and screaming. They'd bash in the door, and that would be that chilling effect to go down the neighborhood. No one would know why he was taken, but he would never be seen again. And it would be a lesson to everybody that you don't talk in public. You don't speak about the government. You don't protest. You don't voice any opposition whatsoever because you'll disappear.
So there's no obligation to release the evidence. It's a secret committee.
Exactly. They're pretty much, as I understand it, what happens is the intelligence comes in from the CIA, and God only knows where they get it. So, you know, this isn't the Bourne Identity. They don't have agents everywhere.
It can be made up.
It can be made up for all we know. You know, we just don't like somebody. And the information goes to the U.S. Joint Special Operations Command. Mm-hmm. They send a memo to the president saying, mind you, this doesn't go through Congress. We are a democratic society. We are a republic. And it doesn't go through our representatives. It goes to the president. The president signs off on the kill list, and literally anyone, American citizen or otherwise, is pretty much dead. It is the equivalent of a medieval death warrant. If you want, you know, an example of feudal medieval behavior, this is it. You know, it's literally signing a death warrant, an execution order.
Mm-hmm. The whole process has been made public, and I think, as you're right, Gus, it's been leaked to intimidate people. It's discussed in a Reuters article on October 5th, and it says it really operates through some mid-level group of civil servants in the National Security Council. Actually, I don't know if they're civil servants, but it's a mid-level group of people. They prepare the list, the kill list, and then they give it to a top-level committee that includes cabinet members. Mm-hmm. And then it says the role of the president is very murky, which I guess is to give him plausible deniability. But this is how it goes. Secret deliberations, secret committee. Of course, we have secret courts, right? The FISA court.
Mm-hmm.
So this is – we're going back before – back into early history, before Magna Carta, when due process didn't exist, the whole concept of the state doing whatever, the king doing whatever he wants, we're descending to that
exactly.
level.
It's quite far reaching, and it's you know, as I said, in its implications, and I really want to stress the the details on this by saying to the listeners out there, this is not okay. This is extrajudicial. This is outside the rule of law. And when we fight these wars supposedly to expand and bring democracy to regions, what kind of democracy are we trying to spread? Is it this kind of communist system where nobody talks openly and dissents to the government? Are we voluntarily just giving up our First Amendment, our right to free speech, because we're supposedly supporting all these protesters around the world? But then, you know, when it comes to leading into the next story, things like Occupy Wall Street or Occupy the Federal Reserve, it's only portrayed in one way because the mainstream media controls that flow of information.
That's right. That's right. And you mentioned the Occupy Wall Street movement. We're to talk about that this afternoon, too. And if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, give us a ring at 1-203-336-9756 or email us at ken@mdrtalk.org. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with Gus Cantavero, and our military affairs correspondent, Marchand McDermott Rowe, is with us. And the name of the program is In Context on WPKN. So what is a commonality between these two movements? I see some kind of a nexus between the assassination program, the war, and the Occupy Wall Street movement. Do you see a connection?
Well, I think I don't see a precise connection as in that. Oh, we have a caller?
We have a caller.
All right, bring him up.
Hey, caller. Good afternoon. You're on the air, WPKN.
Good afternoon.
What? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New Canaan.
All right. What do you have to say?
Well, I had a couple questions.
Sure.
One was, is this a new show on PKN?
Well, it's a new time slot. We were on Sunday nights, and with the new schedule in September, we were now on the second and fourth Mondays, noon to one. So we've been on for a year, but this is a new time slot for us. And we're also continue to be on Sunday night at 10 p.m.
First Sunday.
Yeah, it's a crazy schedule. We give our monthly war report.
Okay. And then, your backgrounds, you're three of you?
There are three of us.
Ken and Gus and Marchand. And you can go get a lot of information about our show at our website, incontextreport.com.
Okay. Is the Obama administration gone one step further than the Bush administration? Are they one step in the wrong direction?
Absolutely, yes. That's the short answer. And the Bush administration was leaving us on the doorstep of insanity, and I think Obama has taken that next step into the abyss. By crossing this Rubicon, as the phrase is, actually openly assassinating an American citizen, and not even using the cover of, say, the Patriot Act to just detain you without an end or without warrant or having to disclose evidence, you know, this is an actual assassination. This is taking it a step further. I think that the Patriot Act and the Bush administration's goals were, by the CIA primarily, were to send that chilling effect to show people we can do whatever we want. Now, this is one more step to just actually end a life without any evidence being shown or a trial and going ahead and saying, we can even kill you now.
And the Bush administration, could one conclude that it was one step worse than, let's say, the Clinton administration?
What are you getting at? Sure, yeah. I mean, everything is a step forward, but they're all two sides of the same coin, you know? I like to say the two wings of the same bird of prey ripping out the eyeballs of the American citizen. So, I mean,
we're heading down a path that really restarted right at the end, during and at the end of World War
II. A path of no return.
Yeah, when we invented the operation, what was it called, the planning committee, the first special operations.
Operations of Strategic Services, the OSS.
During the war, and then after the war, without congressional approval, we set up the cloak and dagger, the special operations branch of the CIA. Alan Dulles did that, and the idea was it was operating right totally below the radar, and we immediately began engaging in very illegal activities, mm-hmm. like Operation Paper in Southeast Asia, where the CIA first got very involved in the drug dealing and the heroin mm-hmm, trade mm-hmm. to finance covert operations. Mm-hmm. The overthrow of Mossadegh in 1953 in Iran, a democratically elected government, which really you have to know about to understand our relationship.
Operation Gladio in Italy, when they used the leave-behind forces, which
right.
operated there to fight the communists covertly, but then really just created a bunch of
and ended up
terror.
In the murder of the head of Italy, mm-hmm. Aldo Moro. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. there's a
when
long pattern. Pardon?
When did that happen?
When was Moro? When was he assassinated?
53, 56?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I think it might have been a little later.
The early 70s. It was part of the...
Oh, 70s?
It was in the 70s, if I recall. 70s, and it's actually, there's information available on it from declassified CIA sources. Operation Gladio is actually a declassified, recognized CIA operation.
If you want to look it up, GLADIO. It's now pretty well known. The Italian government investigated in great detail.
Moro died in 1978.
Okay. Was there any president since beginning with World War II like that has tried to reverse this trend?
Probably Kennedy.
Kennedy. But of course, he had his hands dirty with the Diem assassinations, the Diem brothers. But I think basically he wanted to go in a different direction.
Well, he also though founded the modern day U.S. Special Forces Command. Yeah. So I mean, the problem is for many politicians, it's a very tempting idea.
On the one hand, yes, he did do that, and he obviously nobody's perfect. Obviously, Kennedy was a flawed individual in a lot of different ways, but he wanted to take the control back from the CIA at least put it under the executive branch.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. He wanted to strip their powers of operations and give them over to the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Mm-hmm.
And how big is the CIA's budget relative to like other?
It's a secret.
It's all federal.
That's one thing, though. It's a black budget. So they have an official budget, but then they also have self-financing branches where they use the drug trade to generate a lot of their own operating expenses.
Oh, you remember the Iran-Contra listeners? And they turned out we were financing that illegal war through drug problems.
Yeah, Nicaragua, because we didn't like the Sandinistas because we thought they might be socialists.
So how much money does the CIA actually have? We have no idea because they have front organizations that run for profit and actually generate some of their operating expenses.
There's a fascinating book by Peter Dale Scott, I think listeners should be aware of. Peter Dale Scott has written a bunch of books about the secret government, one called The Road to 9/11, where he developed the concept of the deep state, which he says in all nominally democratic societies, you always have groups of wealthy individuals who will exert disproportionate power over the nominally democratic or republican society. And we have it here, of course, in the United States, but here it's become really embedded in our government, and it operates internally, externally. You can't really tell the dividing line anymore, but the CIA is an absolute critical way in which this deep state projects its powers.
Well, and one of the things I think is interesting...
Really highly influenced by the CIA.
I think fundamentally most of our presidents have been very highly influenced.
Well, I mean, Obama has some pretty serious CIA connections going back to his grandparents, his parents, and a lot of the organizations he's worked for. His first job out of college in Chicago was with a CIA-related organization. You know, his whole...
What job was that?
That was with the Business International, right? That's a noted CIA front organization.
You might want to take a look at the reports of the independent journalist Wayne Madsen, M-A-D-S-E-N, who's done most of the research on that.
His three-part article, was it All in the Family? Or something like that.
It's very hard to trace, but it appears that his grandfather, Dunham, was probably worked for the OSS during World War II and was a CIA station.
And his wife worked in the Bank of Hawaii, which was working as a funnel to send money to CIA organizations overseas.
So, you know, and I tell you, everything seems to be connected. Timothy Geithner's father, who's head of the Treasury Secretary, former head of the Federal Reserve Bank, formerly a member of Kissinger Associates, that his father was a honcho at the Ford Foundation, and of course these foundations often...
Which is where Obama's mother worked.
And he was actually supervising, as I understand it, the micro-banking project in Indonesia that Obama's mother was working on. So it does certainly... Wayne Madsen has raised a lot of very interesting information, which does suggest a strong connection between Obama.
Madsen has found himself, by a tip from inside, that he is also on that hidden kill list.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he left the country for about 9 months at one point, and he made it very public on his website and made a bunch of interviews and went overseas to continue tracing Obama's footsteps when he was overseas.
I can segue into the political campaign. You can see how candidates, if they're in the club, as it were, end up getting consistently favorable coverage and just a lot of coverage. Mm-hmm. And guys who are not in the club, whether they're Dennis Kucinich and the Democrats or Ron Paul and the Republicans, tend to get very little coverage, mm-hmm. With the hope and the expectation they'll eventually go away because name recognition will triumph. And Obama, I think, is a good example. I mean, here was a two-year senator from Illinois. I mean, what kind of qualifications? Not that he isn't a very intelligent man, but why was he just foisted on us as one of the two main candidates, eliminating consideration of everybody but Obama and Clinton?
Well, I think a favorite example of mine is looking at the current run for the nomination. Who does the media keep touting out for the Republican side, at least, the two front runners, you know, Perry and Romney? And the fact is that they are trailing behind Ron Paul, but Ron Paul's never mentioned, and they do the exact same thing. Obama said fundamentally his entire campaign, nothing of any substance. Quite often he contradicted himself.
Yeah.
But the media would never show that. They never let Dennis Kucinich on, who actually might have made a little bit of sense. They always, you know, Obama was automatically from the beginning the front runner. You know, and same thing you're seeing with the Republican running now.
That happened when he attended the Bilderberg meeting in Chantilly, Virginia. And that was when the decision was made that he was going to run over Hillary.
When did he attend that Bilderberg meeting? In
2007.
What?
2007.
So before the campaign really started?
It was right around the beginning portions of it. It was August of 2007, so it was about 1 year in advance of election.
You know, you've really got to be in the club, and that's something that the late Senator Paul Wellstone, who was killed in a plane crash, was very aware of. He said, our media is concentrated in so few large corporations that have interlocking interests that we don't have a free press anymore, and you really can't have a democracy unless you have an independent press.
So who is the new company that owns NBC now that General Electric sold it? And what's their background?
I can look that up.
We can look that up while we talk.
Yeah.
We have a full command center going on.
Caller, do any of the candidates on the Republican side appeal to you?
Me?
Yes.
Well, Ron Paul and... Also, I just heard a little bit about, the trade position of Buddy Romer and the fact he's, like, doing $100 campaign contributions, which I think is a little bit too small, but.
Now, could you tell us a little bit about Buddy Romer?
Buddy Romer is, like, former governor of Louisiana.
Yes.
And he has served as a congressman for 8 years before that. And
what do you see is that? Why is trade? What does he have to offer on the trade issue that's significant? Do you think?
I thought that he's basically against the whole free trade
mm-hmm.
paradigm, which is really, to me, like a corporate trade paradigm. So,
which is really what. Ross Perot ran on largely, right, at two times. With great successes first time, a lot of people agreed that NAFTA was going to be a disaster and free trade was not good for the United States.
And I think that's borne out to be true.
Right.
Well, it looks like what I can find here is that, oh, quickly anyway, is that Comcast is largely connected to Morgan Stanley, UBS, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs.
So this is Comcast.
Yeah, so it's another one of those.
So Comcast is the one that bought NBC.
Yes, and then it's just reconnecting NBC back to all the banks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, these are like pretty, these aren't like inexpensive acquisitions.
Oh, no. No, it takes groups of people to be able to pull this off. It's never just one, you know, one individual or one entity. There always has to be a group that's going to pull their money together and pull their influence.
Name those banks again.
Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan Chase and others.
And this goes back to, like, you know, you were talking about, you sort of briefly alluded to...
Which are all bailout recipients, by the way.
What?
Which are all bailout recipients, by the way.
Yeah, and these so-called banks, because a lot of them, like, sound like investment firms to me by their name.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess...
Well, Goldman Sachs...
Well, without having the Glass-Steagall Act, we no longer have a distinction between investment firms and commercial banks.
But you're right. Goldman Sachs has always been thought of as a premier investment bank. But in the 90s, under Clinton, actually, we got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, which separated...
Huge mistake.
The savings-types institutions, where we keep checking savings accounts from the investment bank.
Yeah, well, and under the penmanship of the senator from Texas...
Uh-huh.
He wrote that bill that Clinton signed.
Well, we thank you very much for the call.
Thanks
we're going to
so
jump.
Much for those calls.
Hold on. We have another caller, so we're going to jump now.
But
thank you very much.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you very much. Comments.
Hello, caller?
Hang up.
I think whoever called the second time
whoever
was
called
the
back,
dial tone.
Go ahead and call back if you were on hold there.
Yeah, and thank you for the caller who was just on the air for your very stimulating questions. We really appreciate that.
Now, this seems like a good time. Oh, you want to give out the...
Let me give out the phone number again here. The name of the show is In Context. My name is Ken. I'm here with Gus and Marchand, and our call-in number is 203-336-9756. And our email is ken@mdrtalk.org. If you'd rather send us an email, we'll get your email right away and we can read your comment or your question on the air. The phone again is 203-336-9756.
So I think it's probably a perfect opportunity to jump into Occupy Wall Street and talk about some financial news.
Now in its fourth week.
Yeah.
We have our caller back.
Okay, let's go.
Okay.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Yes, my name is Stephen, and I heard you talking about NBC and banking just a moment ago.
Yeah, Stephen, where are you calling from?
Oh, Bridgeport. I'm here in Bridgeport.
Yeah, great.
I'm a long-time listener and love the station. But I wanted to make a brief funny about NBC, if I can, real briefly. I own an electronic repair business,
mm-hmm.
and I repair studio equipment at times.
Mm-hmm.
I did some work with a studio on the West Coast that was turned out to be owned by NBC.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, 6 months later, when I finally got paid my lousy $900 for the work, it turns out that all the payments come from overseas.
Okay.
It appears that all their billing is done overseas. Isn't that quite odd?
Was it India?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had to speak with people in India so that I can get paid from a studio in the West Coast. And this is a very, I don't want to say the studio's name, but this is the most prominent West Coast studio there in California that's owned by Sony.
Well, they will do anything it takes to cut costs.
I'm just a one-guy operation. Yeah. They were doing everything they could to avoid me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's the way it goes. I mean, if the most stingy people I've ever met have been... wealthy people. I mean, you know.
Oh, you. Well, my business is surrounds around wealthy people, and I will say this: the most difficult people I have getting paid from are the larger the corporation, the harder it is to get paid.
Absolutely.
They think they have the ability to put up these walls
uh-huh.
and make you go away. Of course, I never went away. I persisted.
Yeah.
Well,
good for you.
Of course, I got even more money than they owed me out of them because I pressed them so hard.
Well, we thank you very much for the call.
Thanks.
It's not just odd, though. You know, uh-huh. here it is, a supposed to be a company we watch every day on television and in the nation, and you know, it's all happening overseas.
Right, and exactly, and they're supposed to be the voice of the people. You know, MSNBC, they're the progressives, right? They want to bring jobs back to the middle class. They want to elevate the poor. But yet their own organization, is sending their pay centers over to India.
Is that right?
I mean, that's what the caller is alluding to or giving to us.
Right.
I think that, you know, it's just very disingenuous.
So yeah, what can we...
It's the same thing as...
Oh, no, I was just saying, okay. this seems to connect in with the Occupy Wall Street,
totally.
The anger
that people
seem to be feeling.
It's exactly the same because it's all about we need to organize, right? We need to unionize. And then you have a favorable coverage coming from groups like, you know, NPR and MSNBC and George Soros and Buffett, and all these guys are saying how this is great. But all they're trying to do is undercut the middle class, which is their main competition.
Well, this is where, you know, brings us to the Occupy
yes.
Wall Street, because you see a lot of these marchers are people with very well-educated people, young college graduates with huge amounts of debt.
Exactly.
And either they're tremendously underemployed or they're completely unemployed.
And I completely understand.
And they're getting a really raw deal in this country.
Absolutely. But the thing is that they're being used as pawns. I believe so. I believe that the movement is trying to be hijacked by these George Soros organizations out there, these branch organizations that are nothing but fronts. And, you know, I've did a lot of digging, as I'm sure you did, and I want to hear what you came to the conclusion of. But a lot of the stuff that I found is connections. Like, for example, I found this interview video with a woman named Nalini Stamp, and she's from the Working Families Party. And she admitted in the video that she had been there since the very beginning, day one, and she's been organizing the movement, and which is supposed to be leaderless, right?
Right.
It's supposed to be a movement without organization, but yet she's been there making sure that everyone's getting fed, that they're being organized, that they have the speakers and all things like that. And obviously the speakers that are coming in are people who are favorable to their view. Now, the Working Families Party is part of the Socialist Democrat Party, which comes from the New Party. The New Party was a group that Obama was briefly a part of until they were defunct. And, you know, through the New Party, you have groups like Acorn, and you have connections back to Soros in multiple ways. You have connections to the CIA, where you have members like what was her name? There's a list here. The people who were part of the group were people like Maude Hurd, Associated Boston Chapter of DSA, and Acorn President Bill Fletcher, a Maoist DSA, Democrat Socialist of America. You've got Cornel West, current advisor to Obama's campaign, active Democrat Socialist of America member, you know, Bill Ayers, all these people. And it was supposed to be that Barack Obama had never been a part of any socialist organizations, except he is in a photograph at one of these campaign events. And then the year later, he becomes a senator of Illinois, and then shortly thereafter, the president.
I really think this is a spontaneous expression
is.
Around the country of tremendous dissatisfaction in two ways, and this is a theme I keep hearing from people interviewed: the gap between rich and poor, the poor expectations of people for jobs, and the second is the corporate control of every aspect of our government.
You're absolutely right. I think it is spontaneous. The time is right. What was the quote by Victor Hugo? Nothing can stop the power of an idea that whose time has come.
Right.
And the time is now. Right. But the globalists and the collectivists are masters at knowing and predicting when things are about to happen. And you know why? Because the CIA and NSA have total control over Facebook and Google, and they know what trends. They know what people are talking about, what they're angry at, what they're planning on doing. And as soon as they motivate to get out there and do something,
and you marry
they're
that
right
to,
there.
And you marry that to the control of the press, which is just really a corporate
expansion
in this country. And then they can direct current popular currents. And I think what you see now, the refrain of the last week is watched the corporate media, is that they're trying to build this as a Democratic version of the Tea Party, and that way I think they can make it harmless, you know. And really, and I posted a blog on this issue at incontextreport.com, and my view is that it's a very good development, but for it to succeed, it really has to focus on the critical issues which would attract support from Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. Mm-hmm. And those are the three issues that I identify are: stop the war. The war is killing our economy. It's not doing anything for the average person. The second is to abolish the Federal Reserve, which is a private banking cartel, which is the linchpin of corporate control of our government, and replace it by a national bank controlled and accountable to the public, an institution that could create money without interest. And the third thing, which goes with number two, is to embark on a massive infrastructure program in this country, financed debt-free or very low interest by our government, to improve our economic competitiveness.
But it has to be done in that order.
It has to be done in that order.
Because you can't take that third one and borrow the money from the Federal Reserve in order to do the massive infrastructure project.
Certainly we'll go broke. And we can't fund infrastructure unless we end the war. Our defense budget is almost $1 trillion a year. We've got to stop the war, and we've got to start building the country. Now, I believe that these positions appeal to populists, whether they're conservatives, libertarians, or progressives on the other end. And I think that if the movement could settle on these common issues and not get tied down in a lot of issues that are going to be divisive, it could be successful.
No, I totally agree. You know, we talk about this all the time, and I totally agree with your analysis there. I love your solutions. I think that we can even go a couple steps further for some more immediate solutions, though. You know, and first of all, I want to warn all the people who are involved with Occupy Wall Street who are still supporting Obama, still supporting the Democrats who are in, you know, the supposed populists in this movement, you know, because you're not going to get a collectivist system that's fair for everybody. You know, I like the idea of socialism, but it would never be a socialism that I would want to live under, because, I mean, that's why I'm a libertarian, because I think that there is no compromise between a system that's run by people, because people are selfish and they're always going to favor themselves. So unless you have a fair rule of law, you can't have a collectivist society. And I think that what you're going to end up with is a system of total control that's run, it's crony fascism, which is where we're going now. I think we're only going to escalate that speed. People think that they're fighting the corporations and that they're going to get fairness back, but instead all they're going to do is have a flood and a glut of labor competition that's going to drive down their wages, and they're going to have further sending of overseas, all these manufacturing jobs, and we're just going to end up like a third world country.
If you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking about assassinations and Occupy Wall Street, give us a ring at 203-336-9756. The name of the program's In Context. My name is Ken. I'm here with Gus and Marchand, and the phone number again is 203-336-9756, or you could email us at ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org, and we'll read your question, your comment on the air.
Let me finish my rant. And Warren Buffett does not care about you. Okay, he doesn't care about us. He doesn't care about the fact that his supposed, you know, his secretary pays higher tax than him, because he's lying to you. She doesn't. He has all of his money hidden in offshore accounts that can't be taxed by the United States government. So he has all these favorable tax loopholes that he himself lobbied for. You know, guys like George Soros lobby for favorable tax situations for them and their shell corporations, so that if they want to increase their profits without going over the tax threshold, they just create a subsidiary, pour some of their money into that, and it comes from multiple sources and can't be taxed. It's all a big shell game. And John D. Rockefeller, the oil magnate, said competition is a sin, right? When he was arguing when he was fighting over the oil control with the Rothschilds. And, you know, what they realized was that all they have to do is just create a control amount of supply that will keep prices artificially high. And that's the way everything is run today. I think some of the solutions that we really could implement that would really help society is not to raise tax rates on really the middle class, which are people who are less than $1 million. Don't forget, people, we've had inflation and stagflation. Your wages are going down and the value of the dollar is also going down. It's stagflation. So when you say the person who makes $250,000 a year is rich, he's not rich. He's the person who's making the restaurants and the pizza shops and the local stores that hire you. And you have to aim higher. You have to aim at $1 million or more. You know, so you have to have an escalated tax scale that begins to affect people who have, 20 times, 30 times, 400 times more than the middle class. It has to be on a rising scale based on inflation. You know, and, you know, if we get inflation under control, then I guess we can talk about what is wealthy. But the faster inflation goes, the less wealthy people actually are. And then I think one of the other things that we could do, and allow for more exemptions for those investing in small businesses to actually spur investment in the economy. Another thing we can do to help small businesses is the Small Business Association. This is someone I really want to get on. His name is Lloyd Chapman, and he's from the Small Business Association of America. And he has tons of evidence that shows that all of the small business contracts, about 90% of them, and we're supposed to get 99% going to small businesses, is going to shell corporations of large corporations. So none of that money is going back to the local economy. And the last thing I think we should do is, this is Ralph Nader's idea, was a 0.1% tax on derivatives would raise $500 billion a year. And he said that in his campaign in 2008.
Yeah, well, I think that where the discussion should be is not with George Soros, but with people like Ralph Nader and Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul. That's
yes.
Where the debate should be in this country. And the corporate media keeps the debate very narrowly focused. So the key issues never get on the table, even in the Democratic Party, which is supposed to represent the working people. I don't know why a peace candidate doesn't run against Obama in the primary. I guess everybody's too afraid. But it seems to me most Democrats would like to end this war.
I would probably think it's another case of controlled opposition. The Democrat Party has orders from the National Democrat Party chairman not to push the issue. And if anyone runs, they'll just rig it. They'll challenge their petitions.
And their career will be over.
Yeah.
That'll be the end of it.
I mean, even locally here in Connecticut, it's come out by the Connecticut president of the Republican Party not to allow challengers in the state elections because they are happy with the status quo and they don't want people who are true libertarians, quote unquote, infiltrating the government and that they're unelectable and so forth.
What did Ralph Nader say? It's a one monster with two heads.
Well, and one thing I think that's interesting to point out is I think a lot of time we forget that these people are our elected representatives. We don't have to put up with their opinion if we don't like it. Mm. You know, if we realize that the Democrats are really the Republicans slightly to the left, that we don't have to vote for them. There are other options out there. This is a democratic republic. We elect these people. They represent us. They represent our will. Mm-hmm. We can choose to be apathetic and elect whoever the powers that be want us to elect.
But the controlled mainstream media gets the orders from orders from headquarters that says we don't like this candidate. We make the election. We choose who wins. We choose who competes. Don't cover this guy.
That's
we're just
right.
going to pretend he doesn't exist, and then people will think that he's not popular, and they won't waste
their
vote.
It's self-fulfilling, and you see it so clearly with Ron Paul, who is doing much better on the Republican side than Dennis Kucinich did.
And we have another call?
We have another call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Where are you calling from?
New Haven.
All right. What's your comment?
Do you think that the entrenched oligarchy is actually going to change peacefully, or do you think a second revolution is a potential?
Well, God, I hope not. I think that the danger with a revolution, especially a violent revolution, is that it leaves a power vacuum, and that people who are just powerful, in a sense, warlords end up becoming your new rulers. You know, like the military is now in control in Egypt, and who knows what's going to happen?
What do you think, caller?
I don't know. I think that the rich people and the oligarchy are so entrenched and so comfortable that they're completely disconnected from the rest of society, and they think that they can't be touched.
Well, you're exactly right.
I think a clear demonstration that they can be touched is probably going to be necessary in order to alter their understanding.
What I would really like to see happen, and it could happen really quickly, is an organized campaign of a boycotting, you know, but we need the education out there. For example, you know, you could take genetically modified ingredients, which are harmful to the human and to the environments in every way possible, just by having a label on the package. Most people don't know that they're buying genetically modified ingredients, and Monsanto lobbies and says that would kill us.
You know,
why?
Gus, you're definitely on to the hidden power of the masses, which is probably greater today than our right to vote, which is the consumer power. And this is
I was talking about this idea of the disconnect with the oligarchy and mm-hmm. the rich.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, in a human body, it's preferable to excise cancers so that the totality can live. And I think you can take that as a scalar model and blow it up to the human body across the planet, the collective.
Okay.
And if 1% of the entire planet is controlling everything and for their own their own benefit, much in a feudal manner, then doesn't it behoove the 99% to rise up and surgically remove?
I don't think the Americans who are marching are necessarily looking to solve all the problems of the world or create some sort of a socialist.
No, I'm just making an analogy about the reasonableness of establishing a non-peaceful solution.
I totally get what you're saying, and I am not a coward. If it comes to the point where illegal orders are given to the military to start rounding up American civilians because they're dissidents, I'm not going to go peacefully. But the whole point is we have to insist on the rule of law if we're going to have a system that is in place that's fair for everybody. So,
if the rule of law has been bought and paid for by the oligarchs,
I get what you're saying.
Definitely,
example for a solution.
I get what you're saying.
We definitely sympathize with your point of view.
But hang on a second. All we have to do is insist that law is abide by. You know, all the corruption that takes place is simply a skirting of the law. It people just not obeying the law. If we have the SEC actually follow the law and go after people who break it, it, then we won't have a problem. We won't have a housing bubble. We won't have a derivatives crisis.
That's why we focus on the war issue and the banking issue. Because if you can focus on the war issue and the banking issue, we can get the corporate dominance of our government to end. Then you and I, we can all figure out the rest of it.
Well, that sounds very hopeful, but I really don't see that as a viable solution.
I mean, if you're to look at revolutions around the world, the most effective form of revolution always has been the economic revolution. I mean, if you were to have the problem that Occupy Wall Street faces is they don't have a unified message. But if you were to take all those people that are occupying Wall Street and all the major cities and you were to place them right in front of the Federal Reserve and say, you know what, we're not moving. We're not letting you guys go to work until you know you get nationalized, I think that would have a lot more effect because violence breeds violence. And you know, looking at Northern Ireland and looking at other examples, it has to be a weapon of last, absolutely.
And
last
the Continuity of Government Act could just be easily imposed.
Isn't the economic policy of the oligarchy who is establishing this country a form of violence against poor people?
Cutting out medicine, cutting out wages. But that doesn't mean that we have to
and die needlessly.
It's completely true, but that doesn't mean that we have to obey by their awful laws. You know, the local police, they're citizens living in our community. They shouldn't be listening to the orders that send them down the street just harassing people for having gardens. You know, I mean, what's the point of that? The woman in Michigan who was threatened with, 75 years in prison for having a garden in her front yard or something like that, and it was just intimidation.
Police are there to protect property, and the people who own the most property are the oligarchy. So essentially, the police are working for them and not for us as citizens.
Yeah, they're
just hired thugs. They're an occupying army. Everybody in a ghetto knows that.
That is the most cynical view of it, yes. But if they were to realize where the power really lies, I think maybe their allegiances might change because they're not paid out of the pockets of George Soros. They're paid out of the tax money that comes from the citizens that they're harassing. Understand?
That sounds logical, except more money is used by from the oligarchy than from us.
Yes, they peddle their influence by changing policy, but the law stays the same. The Bill of Rights stays the same. The Constitution stays the same. So to say that the police have been militarized.
Well, that takes it back to what you started with the killing of this American mm-hmm. who was targeted for assassination.
Right. I mean, the police
apparently the Bill of Rights doesn't work and the Constitution doesn't.
Okay, Obama needs to be impeached. Okay, so Ron Paul and Kucinich are the only people who actually floated that idea. We need people to insist on that. When it comes to the next election, that needs to be a sticking point. Anyone who did not go along with the impeachment of Obama needs to be ousted because the rule of law has to be abided by.
I'm afraid we're coming to the end of the show. We really appreciate your call. It's extremely thought-provoking.
Yes,
caller.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you very, thank
much.
You very much, caller.
Call back again.
So that was a pretty – I think he represents one end of the debate, which is that it's pretty
frustration,
hopeless.
Frustration, right?
And I can understand where the caller is coming from.
We all get it. We all get the frustration. I mean, I was out of work for a pretty long time and recently been doing better, but I haven't forgotten what it was like to not have money. I get it completely. But we got to sign off for today. We have a minute left.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what's coming up on March.
Yeah, let's give the plugs.
On October the 24th, we have Mark – at noon, we have Mark Dice coming up, the author of Big Brother. And what's he going to talk about, guys?
He's going to talk about the police state, technological control grid, the centralization of information, and the future of technology and warfare.
And Marchand and Gus and I will be appearing at the Greenwich Public Library on Saturday, October 22nd at 2 p.m. There's going to be a free play there, a free performance of Mark Twain.
We will be signing autographs.
We'll be signing autographs. We'll be happy to meet any listeners who'd like to come there. And you get more information about that as well at ken@mdrtalk.org. Drop me a note. Or at our website, incontextreport.com.
Send us some emails. Exercise your right to free speech. You don't use it, you're going to lose it.
And the show is produced by MDR Productions, Inc.
You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and streaming live at WPKN.org.
See you next time.
Take it easy.
Thanks very much, listeners. Take care.